Mark Twain's The Adventure of Tom Sawyer is one of those anomalies of classic literature. It's a classic literary novel that we actually like to read. Why is that? Why do we enjoy these exploits of a mischievous preteen? And what do we have to do to make our own stories as endearing as Mark Twain did his? We'll answer these questions and have some great fun along the way. That's this week on Be the Story. Welcome to Be the Story. I'm Tim King. This week has been rather slow in terms of postings on BeTheStory.com. That's because it's been rather slow on the story front in terms of blogs that I read and so forth. But I'm actually toying with the idea of posting every day on some topic. But even though things have been slow in the blogs, they have not been slow in my own life. Amazon.com has been getting more business out of me than they deserve. I finished off Kate Wilhelm's Storyteller, Writing Lessons and More from 27 Years of the Clarion Writers Workshop. I also started Nora Roberts' short story Spellbound. It's actually more of a novella. Picked up a copy of that just to try out Nora Roberts' writing, but have intentions of getting at least one of her novels. And I have two more novels on order, and have, of course, been working on my own short story, which I'll post over at the I Should Be Writing workshops once it's in a in a state that can actually be read. Right now, the whole thing's kind of in disarray, because I've been adding in pieces and rearranging stuff. And, well, you know what it's like, right? And this week I've really been pondering the term story geek. I know I've mentioned this before. I don't know that story geek is the best term to describe what I am, but it's the only one I can think of. When I read a novel, for example, everything in the novel is there to tell the story. I don't care about vibrant imagery except in as much as it actually describes what's happening to the characters. I don't care about literary prose or, you know, vibrant, nifty, long words or any of that stuff. In fact, more often than not, literary concerns tend to get in the way of a good story, rather than adding to it. When I watch a movie, everything in the movie is there to tell a story. I don't really care about cinematography so much, except in that it serves to tell the story. When I play a video game, the gameplay can be really cool, but if it doesn't tell a great story, I don't care about it. I also find myself, I can't read through a novel, for example. I was rereading big portions of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer this week, of course, and I just couldn't read it without analyzing it. I'm not talking about literary analysis, you know, seeing symbols behind everything or any of that stuff. I'm talking about story analysis. I just couldn't read a simple book without seeing, in my own mind, listing the major conflicts without asking, why do I sympathize with this character? Without coordinating conflicts and characterization, saying, oh, this conflict characterizes this particular character, or adds to the setting, tells me this about the setting or the rest of the story. So that's where my thoughts have been. Anyway, right after this break, let's talk about The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. What makes it work? How do we take these lessons and apply them to our own stories? Be back in just a minute.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years, on a thousand maybe worlds.
This is a Spaceship Radio podcast.
Are you in the bag?
No, but every week we'll bring you the best in science fiction radio from the 1950s.
Now here they come, ladies and gentlemen. The Martians.
And they will, every week, right into your iPod. Just visit www.spaceshipradio.com for all the details.
Prepare for maximum acceleration.
That's spaceshipradio.com, where we rocket you into the past.
Holy mackerel.
Welcome back to Be the Story. I did a Google search for Tom Sawyer discussion questions, and then very quickly realized that I didn't really like any of them. Most of them are literary questions. For example, one of the questions from the Cliff Notes discuss Injun Joe as the epitome of evil. Well, that's a nice, deep, dark subject, yes. But it really doesn't interest me. Slightly more interesting was a question from another site. How does Tom Sawyer relate to the world of adult authority and responsibility? Can he be said to mature during the course of the novel, as critics have asserted? If so, in what ways? Even this, however, is not exactly interesting to me. I'd be interested in looking at the events in the story that caused Tom Sawyer to mature, if he did, or to change, and how those events go together into a broader story arc. I'm more interested in asking, what conflicts are there in the story? Why do we even want to read this story in the first place? What keeps us turning pages? What qualities of the story make the story seem realistic to us? Why do we identify with Tom? He's not really the heroic type of character. I mean, he's a mischievous little boy. But in a way, he is our hero, and we do end up rooting for him. Why? What in the story provokes that reaction from us? Authors, when they write a story, don't usually think about symbolism. They don't think about metaphor. Most of these discussion questions, the literary discussion questions, are in fact provocative because there are multiple answers and all the answers are right. So as an author, you don't think about these fuzzy areas that generate more questions than they answer. Why do we like to read this particular novel? Or any novel? I've tried to read a lot of literary fiction. Haven't succeeded with very much of it. Hey, I'm the first person to admit that. But Mark Twain's work I've always enjoyed. And it's because he has a firm grasp of the basics. He uses conflict to build momentum. He always starts with a problem, never with the solution. from the very first word on the very first page, in fact. The story starts with Aunt Polly looking for Tom, and Tom is nowhere to be found. That's a problem. It makes us want to read on to see what's going on. What happened to Tom? Why does Aunt Polly want to find him? And why is she so angry with him? But the story doesn't stop there. It goes on to layer these conflicts, and it builds complexity. During Tom's exploits, he develops feelings for Becky Thatcher. And then there's the whole story with Injun Joe, which lasts over a number of his adventures. And the adventures get more and more interesting as you progress through the story. The very first conflict is, in fact, pretty trivial. But then they start to get more interesting. For example, with Injun Joe, when Tom finally breaks down and decides to testify so that the truth that Muff Potter was not responsible for the murder, but rather that Injun Joe was, you fully expect that Injun Joe will be brought to justice right there. But of course, Injun Joe escapes out of the courtroom before he can be taken into custody. This builds the tension rather than resolving it. So here we have Tom trying to resolve the tension, resolve the conflict, and it ends up becoming an even worse conflict because now Tom is not merely afraid that if he comes forward with the truth that Injun Joe will harm him. Now he's certain that if Injun Joe gets his hands on him, he'll harm him. By the time you reach the end of the novel, Tom is fearful for his life, both fearful that Injun Joe will do him in, and afraid that he'll die trapped in a cave, lost in the cave, with Becky Thatcher. You would think that since he likes her, this would be just great, but of course it isn't any fun to be trapped, alone, lost in a cave, and no one even knows that you're gone. Three major story conflicts: Becky Thatcher being lost in the cave, and Injun Joe. All three of these story conflicts are being tied up together. So, what are the three lessons? We always start with the problem, never with the solution. Layer problems together. This builds even more momentum and also builds complexity into the story. Then escalate conflicts. When you solve one, introduce an even bigger one, or better vignette, have the character try to solve one and make that turn into an even bigger conflict. Another thing that Mark Twain did with this story was to impart realism into it. And to do this, he drew on his real life. In the preface, he specifically wrote, "Most of the adventures recorded in this book really occurred. One or two were experiences of my own, the rest, those of boys who were schoolmates of mine. Huck Finn is drawn from life. Tom Sawyer also, but not from an individual. He's a combination of the characteristics of three boys whom I knew, and therefore belongs to the composite order of architecture." Mark Twain wrote what he knew, and therefore his story has an air of realism to it. For example, even early in the story, when Tom is whitewashing the fence, and of course he doesn't want to do this chore, until Ben Rogers comes along, then Tom discovers an immutable characteristic of human nature, which is, people will pay for something that you cannot give them for free. That's true today just as much as it was back in the 1870s when Mark Twain originally wrote it. In fact, some consultants have even stated for the record that they got into their chosen field of expertise by charging for their own advice. They couldn't get anyone to listen to them while they were giving advice away for free, because, after all, you only get what you pay for. The advice didn't change, but the price tag did, and now they are considered experts and successful consultants in their fields. I love stories like that. I'm going to take a quick break now, and after the break, I'll talk about using story realism to generate story and character ideas. So stay tuned.
Information and inspiration for writers, that's what The Writing Show is all about. Whether you write fiction, nonfiction, screenplays, poetry, songs, or just email, we're here to entertain, help, and engage you. Every week or so, we offer a new podcast designed to shed light on some aspect of writing. You'll meet experts like book publicist Karen Villanueva, Chris Beatty, wild and wacky founder of National Novel Writing Month, and 12 freaky horror writers who've read their own works into our microphone just for you. We also post articles and other resources at our website, www.writingshow.com. Join me, Paula B., and my guests each week as we explore the world of words. The Writing Show, where writing is always the story.
Welcome back to Be the Story. We've been talking about The Adventures of Tom Sawyer by Mark Twain. Mark Twain, he himself said in the preface to the book that he drew on real life for his stories. He wrote what he knew. We can do this too, not only to build realism into our own stories, but to generate story ideas. This is a very common question that I see on the writers' boards. Where do I get story ideas? Or where do you get ideas for characters? Well, it's okay to get character ideas from real people that you know. Usually you don't want to take a whole person that you know and distill him into a character. But the most reliable place to get interesting characters is to take interesting characteristics from people that you know and build them into the characters that you write. You can do the same thing to get ideas for story situations or even for full-blown conflicts in your stories. Think of the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to you. Think of the time that you were the most afraid, more afraid than you've ever been at any other time in your life. Or think of a time when you were backed up into a corner, you had a great challenge or a great obstacle in front of you, and you didn't know how you were going to overcome it. These are excellent fodder for story conflicts. And I know it's obvious, but obvious does mean overlooked. There's another one that you can use for a great story idea. The key here is to think about the bad times. Those are what make great story ideas. Don't think about the good times. The good times make good story resolutions, maybe, but during the high point of the story, we do not want our characters to have everything work out for them. We want everything to go wrong. We want things to get worse. That's what keeps us on the edge of our seats, right? So draw on real life for your own stories. Use people you actually know as a basis for your fictional characters. Use real situations and things that you yourself have experienced as a basis for your story ideas. There's one more thing that really fascinated me about The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. And that is that Tom is a mischievous little boy. He's almost the anti-hero. And yet, we sympathize with him. From very early in the story, we sympathize with him. I think that's because while he gets into trouble, he never actually hurts anyone. Well, all right, there was that kid that was trying to beat up on him. But he deserved to be hurt. So Tom gets into the jam, and he gets in a scuffle, and he plays hooky from school. And we know he'll be punished severely for these infractions. Yet we know that Tom would take his punishment. And in fact, at times he does. He takes the blame for something that Becky Thatcher had done. And this, of course, is very noble. And it also wins him Becky's heart, which, of course, is also really great. Anyhow, even though we know that Tom would be just fine with being punished, we also know that Tom does not want to be punished. And we also can see that punishing Tom is not likely to accomplish anything more in improving his behavior than it has in the past. The thing that makes us sympathize, in fact, with Tom is not that he's perfect, because he isn't, but rather that he's imperfect. He's a real little boy. And regardless of whether you are a male or female, you can no doubt identify with him. We all, when we were kids, got into trouble from time to time, did silly things, experienced the same sorts of emotions that Tom Sawyer does. And so the realism of Tom Sawyer, the character, has a lot to do with why we identify with him. But it's not the whole of the story. Tom is a realistic character put into a realistic conflict. While we do want him, at some level, to be a good little boy, or, well, maybe we don't want him to be a good little boy. But even if we do, we surely don't want to see him beat by his Aunt Polly. So it's this combination of a realistic character who's facing a real danger, or realistic danger. This is a variant of having a realistic character with a noble goal and some obstacle to his achieving that goal. In fact, in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, we see that Tom does at points have noble, very noble goals, especially in connection with the murder that Injun Joe committed and Muff Potter was blamed for. And then when he's trapped in the cave with Becky Thatcher, having this realistic character in these situations just endears him even more to us. So the former two things that I talked about, use conflict and use realism, real stories that actually happen to you, when you combine these two into a character, you get a sympathetic character. What storytelling lessons have you learned from The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, or actually from any of Mark Twain's novels or stories? Mark Twain is one of my favorite classic authors. So feel free to discuss him on BeTheStory.com. Just leave a comment in the blog entry. And also on BeTheStory.com, a poll is posted. Tell me what you think of the term story geek. And if you like Be the Story, please tell your friends about it. Next week, I thought I'd go in a slightly different direction and talk about stupid story mistakes. I'll pull out one or two from my own writing, as well as some that I've noticed in published works by very well-known and respected writers. So next week on Be the Story, stupid story mistakes. I'll see you then.